You are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, PhD student at the University of Copenhagen. Help others find out about us by sharing our Facebook page, facebook.com/socialmediaandpoliticspodcast, or mentioning our Twitter account, at @SMNPpodcast. You can also use these to get in touch with us about suggestions for future episodes, or just dropping a line and letting us know what you think of the show. All right, today we're going to be talking about bots. It's something we touched on a bit in our Year in Review episode, but I think it's an up-and-coming political topic that deserves its very own show. We're only just beginning to understand the impact of bots on politics. We know that bots have been used to disrupt the work of activists and protesters online in, for example, the Middle East. And even in more democratic regimes like the US, bots have been used as a means to sway public opinion. Bots can be deployed to pump up the number of followers of a candidate's social media pages, making them look more popular. They can spam stories and spread fake news or misinformation. And getting more and more sophisticated, they can even carry on conversations with human users. Now, when we talk about bots, we're generally talking about Twitter bots. According to a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission back in 2014, Twitter reported approximately 10% of its active users were bots of some kind. What this means for politics still remains an open question, but the recent US election has drawn some serious attention to the study of bots. A recent study by researchers at the University of Southern California estimate that over 400,000 bots were involved in the Twitter conversation in the months leading up to the election, and they generated approximately one-fifth of the tweets about the election. My guest today is Sam Woolley, an expert in bot research and a PhD candidate at the University of Washington. Sam is currently the director of research at the Oxford Internet Institute's Computational Propaganda Project, or COMPROP. The project aims to bring together social and information scientists to investigate the impact of bots on social media. You can follow Sam on Twitter at Samuel Woolley, that's SamuelWoolley, and learn more about the COMPROP project at politicalbots.org. Sam, thanks for taking the time out, and welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, what exactly is a bot, and why are they important to research when thinking about political discussions online?
So, the word bot has been around basically since as long as the internet has. Bots are automated software that are used to do tasks on behalf of people. So, there's lots of different things online that would be very mundane, like searching through the whole web for different links, or searching through particular large data sets for things would be a task that bots would be used for. Mm-hmm. What we talk about when we talk about bots in our project is social bots. And social bots are automated software accounts on social media, like Twitter or Facebook, that mimic real people and can engage in conversations, but also do a lot of other things. Mm.
Before we get into the specifics of these actual bots and what they are, can you tell our listeners a little bit about the COMPROP project and what your team at the Oxford Internet Institute is doing to try to better understand this social phenomenon?
Sure, of course. Yeah, the COMPROP project is a five-year project funded by the European Research Council with an EU 2020 grant. So it's a large-scale project focused on comparative social science and information science. What we're trying to do is kind of run a diagnostic on the way that bots are being used for political purposes over social media worldwide. So we're not just looking at the US election or the Brexit referendum. We're looking at the Middle East. We're looking at the way that China uses bots, Russia, and then taking a step back and trying to put together the puzzle of how different techniques develop with political bot use and what we call computational propaganda, and also whether or not they are effective and end up having behavioral change. Because the ultimate goal is to decide how people can combat bots or how people can identify bots and to prevent them from having a significant effect upon public opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it for me, the term bot sounds something that's, you know, out of a sci-fi movie or something super right. Futuristic. But, you know, what we're uncovering is that bots are very much a part and a very big part of social media today, especially on Twitter. But I'm still kind of unclear as to what kind of level of tech proficiency does it take to create a bot, and how exactly would you go about actually making one?
Right. So if you wanted to build a bot on Twitter, for instance, it's quite easy. There's a number of different coding repositories that have code for a bot that you can basically plug into the Twitter API and launch a bot account, launch an automated account. When I say API, I mean the application programming interface on Twitter. It's sort of the back end, the measuring tool for Twitter.
Right.
And so anyone with some rudimentary coding knowledge can launch a fairly unsophisticated bot. All of that said, there's also other platforms like If This Then That, which help people to automate their presence online too. And on those platforms, you need little to no coding experience as well. Lots of the people who I talk to, I should mention that one of the things we do here at Comprop is a lot of interviews with people who build bots. A lot of those bot builders tell us that they actually aren't computer coders by trade, or many of them don't really even code, but they use different platforms online to help them automate their presence online.
Mm-hmm. So is it that you would go into a repository like GitHub and then you would you would kind of download the script of whatever you wanted the bot to do? Like,
yeah, that's spot on. And then the other thing you can do is through things like If This and That, during the U.S. election, we noticed that there was a site called PJNet, Patriotic Journalist Net, being used to automate a lot of conservative presence online. You would just enter a few basic details, and then the software on those platforms would allow you to automate your presence in certain ways.
Mm. And when we talk about bots getting more sophisticated, I mean, is this just that the code is getting better? I'm specifically interested in this idea of bots that kind of, they automatically reply to what you're saying, so you can actually carry on a conversation with a bot. Is this just a bunch of if-then lines of code?
Well, it depends on what you want your bot to do. So in terms of the way that bots have been developing, I think that the most important thing to talk about is their social uses and their communicative uses. Bots have been used by advertisers and marketing firms online for a really long time to automate the sending of spam email and even to try to send people advertisements over chat rooms. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is chatbots. Chatbots are specifically bots that are built to maintain some degree of conversation with a person, a real person. Machine learning is at the heart of current advances in smart bot technology, so bots that are on social media. But machine learning is not to a place at the moment where bots can hold more than a few lines of code worth of conversation with a real person and get away with it. Mm-hmm. So what we mean more when we say that there's a lot of innovation going on in the bot world is that people are starting to use bots for novel social uses. And amongst these uses is the manipulation of the political sphere online. That for us is particularly concerning. What happens when you take spam bot technology and you use it to attack activists, or you take that same technology and you code it with a set number of threats that the bot can say to a journalist, and then you deploy a bot army against a journalist in a country experiencing a political crisis.
Huh. And so how exactly would that work if you have, for example, a protest in an authoritarian regime, for example, and there's a certain, I don't know, a revolution hashtag? How would bots counter that? Is it you just flood the hashtag with pro messages, or?
That's sort of the way that this has played out in several countries. Take, for instance, Mexico. Mexico is a place where there's been a lot of what we call political bots used over Twitter and other social media platforms in attempts to demobilize activists. And the way that the people launching the bots have done this in Mexico is to almost exactly what you're saying. They take the hashtags that are associated with the movements that people use to coordinate and organize on Twitter or to check in with the movement. And they basically make a ton of spam content and they tweet it out using that hashtag and make the hashtag irreparably damaged and demobilize communication organizations surrounding that hashtag. The other thing that they can do is attack key members of a activist organization. We see this happen a lot, not just in authoritarian countries, in emerging democracies and democracies as well, that bots get deployed to massively magnify attacks upon people with opposition political views. Mm-hmm. And that causes a chilling effect.
And So let's say a hashtag is compromised by a bunch of bots. And obviously the governments in this example, you know, have substantial resources that are able to really push out a lot of spam content. Mm-hmm. Do these activist organizations know that this is going on? Do they sort of counter it with the new hashtag or with bots of their own? Is there a strategy for sort of bot warfare?
I'm glad you asked that, actually. In Turkey, we've seen activists a couple years ago use bots to counter what was called the Erdogan bot army on Twitter. So yes, activists absolutely do know that they're being attacked. Oftentimes, it's not clear to them what exactly the technology is. As bots have become more prevalent on social media, but also as people are more educated about their political use, we have activists contacting us all the time telling us that there's a group of bots attacking us surrounding this or that issue. The other thing that activists can do is report the attack to the social media platform. It tends to be at the moment that social media platforms, Facebook or Twitter, what have you, rely largely upon the users to let them know when something malicious is going on their platform. And so we always tell activists to let the social network know.
Mm-hmm. And if one person can create a bot, they can also create an army of bots or what you guys in the Comprop project are calling botnets. Can you talk a little bit about a botnet and kind of what the implications of those are?
So botnets, like you said, are collections of bots that are generally created to be interrelated. So if you create one bot online, it's very difficult to get that bot a significant following so that it looks realistic as a person.
Right.
So if you're trying to trick people into believing that the bot is a real person that is selling perhaps pro-government ideal, you want the bot to look real.
And sorry to interrupt. I just thought it was funny. I was doing a little bit of background research for the episode, and you have a certain name for these, what was it, egg bots? Or?
Oh, yeah, Twitter eggs.
Twitter eggs, right.
Yeah. So Twitter eggs, like some people also call them sock puppets. Those accounts are, a lot of them are purpose-built. You'll build a few accounts that are quite convincing as real people, and then you'll build several other accounts that follow them to make it look as if they have real followers and the other people are retweeting them. So when you start to do a bit of research, that it holds up a bit. Botnets make it possible for, like you said, one person to seem like they are 100 people. So if you take, for instance, the U.S. election case, we had lots of alt-right bots that were tweeting about the conservative right-wing messages that are quite popular in America. So what we had happen was that a very small percentage of people built a very large network of bots, and it made them seem like they were much more popular than they actually were.
Mm-hmm. Does that have a sort of, I don't know what you would call it, a kind of social normalizing effect where maybe some views that are controversial, kind of it becomes more okay to accept them, or people feel like it's kind of the normal, a normal way to discuss politics precisely mm-hmm. because there's a large amount of people. Like, is that kind of phenomenon at play?
Yeah, that's what we've found in the data. I think that what you're saying is to put it in simple terms, is that when there's bots that make one thing look popular, that there's a bandwagon effect amongst people that also allows them to express tertiary or marginal views. The alt-right was quite fond during this last election of attacking Jewish people. And when they use bots to do that, oftentimes there's a lot of other people that will chime in when they think that it's normalized. And that is a very dangerous thing that we think happens on social media. There's a lot of research out there to show that people follow the leads of others and of the crowd on social media. There's a lot of research out there about homophily and about echo chambers. Mm-hmm. And that shows that this is certainly a thing.
And to kind of follow up on that with the latest U.S. election, right? You guys have been doing quite a bit of work on that. And what have you found so far?
We found a number of different things. We found that the bots that were interacting surrounding the U.S. election were not just being created within the United States. They were transnational.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times there was bots that were coming from other countries that were still tweeting about the U.S. election.
And are you able to trace where they're from? I mean, there's been a lot of discussion recently about the Russian hacking charges. I mean, can you trace them to a specific location, or are these people kind of savvy enough to hide their accounts through VPNs or something similar?
a lot of people are savvy enough to use VPNs to hide their accounts, and most accounts are clunkily geotagged when they're bots. So they'll be geotagged to be in Chicago, but there'll be something that is a tell that perhaps the account is actually in Russia or the Philippines. The way that we track the places that bots are being launched from, there's a couple different ways. One is simple. It's qualitative. It's talking to people who build and make bots and people who are involved in those industries. So we ask them, you know, where do you buy your bots from? What are the companies and what are the people who are working on this stuff doing, and where are they doing it? And we're told a lot of times that, oh, well, it's a very, very much a transnational game. There's companies that are in the Philippines and Vietnam and also in Russia that build and sell these things online. And the bots are not just used for politics. A lot of the bots that were used during the U.S. political election have now transitioned themselves from talking about politics to now trying to sell things. So the bots are often multi-purpose. Uh-huh. And they're built and they have a presence online, and that presence is used not just to sell politics, but it's also used to sell commercial items.
Interesting. I mean, we were talking about this also in our sort of year in review episode, that the whole fake news phenomenon was market driven by some, you know, teenagers in Macedonia. So like a lot of other aspects of social media, this bot phenomenon seems to be still market driven at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's kind of what we've said since the very beginning, that like an investigative journalist would say, we tell people follow the money. So try to figure out where the money's going, and you'll end up finding the people who build the bots. We know that in the United States, people have to declare filings with the Federal Elections Commission on who they're hiring to do digital campaign work. And through a little bit more work, you can start to figure out where these bots are originating and sort of what their goals are. All of that said, bots are a tool at the end of the day. They're used to do specific things. And so bots can be used to do any number of things. They can be used to spread fake news, for instance, or, you know, more sort of pertinently, what I'd call disinformation or misinformation. And that becomes especially pervasive when it's oriented towards people in countries with limited media systems or on platforms where teenagers are working to develop a political identity, but also in places like the United States, where there's a large wellspring of discontent, and you can use bots to basically change the tactical valence of a campaign.
Yeah, that's interesting. So are you saying, or do you have evidence showing that digital directors, the strategists for campaigns, are they actively using bots? We normally think about it as kind of the bots as the bad guys. But is this kind of a normal tool for politicians to use?
We don't have direct evidence that either of the Republican or the Democratic campaign bought bots for their own campaigns. What we do know, though, is that we've talked to several people in both parties who have told us that the use of bots, both for sending out pro campaign messaging and for padding follower lists of politicians in attempts to make them look more popular, or, for instance, retweeting content to make their retweets look like they're very high, is quite a common tactic, and in American politics even, and that it's seen as not something that is looked down upon, but rather that it's marketing. It's a savvy way to use the internet. And so if you have a digital marketing firm that says that they can get you lots of followers, then you sort of let the follower, or you let the firm do it. I think it seems like willful ignorance a lot of the time with these campaigns. Like they'll hire subcontractors, and the subcontractor can promise them all sorts of different things about their social media presence. And then the subcontractor is absolutely using bots, but they're calling it automated software or something like that.
Right.
The other thing that's really important to mention is that that anyone can build and launch a bot on Twitter. So it's not just, for instance, the political campaigns or parties in countries that are launching bots. It's also a number of different other sorts of people. We've talked to bot makers who are computer programmers who consider themselves particularly politically conscious, and they build hundreds of bots just to send out messages that the person thinks are important for other people to hear. The end goal with a lot of the bots that people that are not involved with political campaigns, at least not officially, and even the bots that political campaigns and politicians worldwide are known to have built and launched is to game Twitter's trends and Facebook's newsfeed to make sure that the politicians' concerns, the hashtags associated with the politicians, show up at the top of the newsfeed, or at the top of the Twitter trends.
Right, controlling the flow of news or information.
Exactly.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about these interviews with bot makers. I mean, who are they? Is there a common thread running through them, or is it really a diverse crowd?
It's a pretty diverse crowd. In the very beginning, we started by talking to a bunch of people who built bots that were being used for sort of progressive purposes, or just, for instance, to spread news, or to make jokes, or to do all sorts of other like fun stuff on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. And those folks were an incredibly diverse group and were incredibly conscious about the way that bot building took place and about the ethics of bot building. As we started to delve deeper and talk to people who build bots more for political purposes, they run the gamut. So they could be built by digital marketing firms or advertising companies. They can also be built by lone wolf hackers who have some knowledge of computer programming and have built and launched bots for other purposes. It's important to remember that bots don't just get used on social media. You can use bots in gaming, for instance. You can use bots for search engine optimization to basically drive up link presence online. And so a lot of people who are doing that kind of work are also doing the work of building bots on social media.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there's always a person behind the bot, or generally
That's right.
a person behind the bot. So to what extent are the programmers accountable, especially if the code to write the bots continues to automate the process or implement some kind of machine learning? How do you manage that accountability factor, especially in a contentious political election?
Accountability is so tricky. If someone is launching bots that are issuing hate speech or malicious attacks, and there's laws on the books within the country that the bots are sort of interacting within. So if they're talking about the U.S. election, then it sort of seems clear that that's quite illegal. But a lot of times the code is built upon by multiple different people, so it's collaborative code. Take, for instance, we talked about GitHub as a repository. A lot of the bot code on there has multiple different authors, and so it becomes very unclear who has written what part of the code and whether or not there's liability amongst all people or just on one person. The other thing is that the role of the platforms is fairly hands-off at the moment. Facebook and Twitter have received a lot of backlash after the U.S. election about the use of hate speech or fake news on their sites, and they've attempted to curb that in some ways. But again, the norm remains that their users report to them when things that are bad go on. Twitter says and has said publicly in response to our project's research that bots don't have an effect upon public opinion. They don't change the way that people vote. But our response to that is, then do advertisements on Twitter have an effect on public opinion? Mm-hmm. You use advertisements in a very similar way to the way that bots post content. And the other thing that I would say is, what happens when bots magnify a specific hashtag unrealistically and cause it to trend on Twitter? Why do you have trends on Twitter if not to get people to read about what's popular?
Right. So in that sense, bots can kind of create a snowball effect, where if they can just get something landing on Twitter, then humans can kind of take over.
That's right. And a lot of times that's the goal, to create a kind of snowball effect. It's that bots enter the scene, and they're kind of like, it's kind of like they plant the seeds for what's going to happen. So they plant the ideas, and then oftentimes a botnet will respond to the ideas and say, oh, that's really interesting. And then they'll wait for humans to pick up on the conversation and slowly leave the conversation. Hmm. I've talked to people in several countries who have built bots that do this exact thing. And it's fairly sophisticated and very manipulative.
So what's the future of these bots? I mean, are they as more and more code gets written, more and more ideas come out? I mean, are we kind of at the beginning of the sophistication of bots, or do you think we're somewhere in the middle? It's hard to tell, but...
It's hard to tell. There's progress being made in all sorts of different sectors, like good uses for bots and malicious uses for bots. And I know good is in the eye of the beholder, but I think that there's certainly democratic uses for bots. I think that the future of bots lies in sort of, at the moment, collaboration between humans and bots. So machine learning isn't at a point where big armies of botnets are launched to effectively talk to people and get them to change their minds by acting like people. So if the bots go out there and say, hey, we should talk about this thing and try to get someone to change their mind about vaccines, that's not like extremely effective at the moment. But what is effective is having one person control, say, 100 accounts on Twitter. And when a person interacts with the bot, to have the person step in and begin having a conversation. And we see that model in a lot of countries, especially where labor is cheap. And this is the reason for that transnational kind of bot use. There's 10 people sitting in a room controlling thousands of accounts, and their job is to log on and make the account look legit as much as possible. And that is a way for them to circumvent Facebook's behavioral recognition algorithm, which is the way that Facebook, as far as I know, detects bots when they attempt to act like Facebook users. The people that I know that have launched Facebook bots say that they use cyborg bots. They're combinations of people and automation, because when they've used just bots, they get caught by Facebook, and Facebook tells them that these accounts need to be a group. They're not allowed to be a real profile. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's coming right now with bots is advances in machine learning. So machine learning is getting more sophisticated, but it's not at the point where bots will be able to have a human-like life on their own online. You can deploy a bot that learns from its surroundings, but I think Microsoft's Tay experiment was a good example of what happens when you build and launch a machine learning bot in the wild without having all sorts of checks and balances.
And what happened there?
With Tay, Microsoft launched this bot that was meant to be like a teenage girl, and it was meant to learn from its surroundings, but it was manipulated by the internet community to say racist things or hateful things, and was a massive marketing debacle for Microsoft. And so I think that it shows that a lot of planning needs to go into the way that a machine learning algorithm is written, and to have a series of fail-safe techniques that stop the bot from doing malicious things. And that kind of takes us back to that question of culpability, of who's responsible for the actions of a bot. If you release a machine learning bot online and it's not well built, it can do all sorts of things. There's actually a really interesting case in the Netherlands where a man launched a machine learning bot, and the bot started issuing death threats on Twitter. And so the police showed up at this guy's house and said, "Why is this account in your name issuing death threats on Twitter?" And it was actually a bot.
Can these be used, these kind of machine learning bots that engage with users, can these be used as a means for data collection, for example, for advertising companies? I mean, if you just spam one message, can you then kind of harvest the responses and get at some sort of measure of opinion about a product or political candidate?
You could use a bot like that. I think that you'd call that sort of a bot more of a scraper. So one of the things that we know political campaigns have done is attempt to do individualized advertising. That's sort of what people say is the frontier of political organization, that you need to advertise to every person singularly. And so what they do is they'll build scraper bots that they launch on social media to collect information on people's platforms and on the way that people speak. And then they build a repository and analyze it using various amounts of code. And that's a fairly easy thing to do.
Interesting. So just kind of wrapping up, something that I wanted to touch upon is the kind of bots on different platforms, because we generally talk about Twitter bots. You've been mentioning some Facebook bots. I think from my own Instagram profile, if I use enough hashtags, I'll encounter some bots, even though they just seem to be kind of more for increasing followers. But what are the kind of, how does one create a bot on Facebook, for example? Or where, is there a platform where bots are not?
It's easiest to build and deploy a bot on Twitter, if we're talking the largest social media networks. It's quite difficult to build and launch a bot on Facebook. If you want to build and launch a bot on Facebook, you need, like I said, to have some kind of human oversight. And so the capital in terms of time that that takes is quite high. You have to hire people to maintain cyborg-like accounts on Facebook that are oriented towards whatever you want them to do, so whether it's selling stuff or trying to send propaganda to people. Bots absolutely exist on Instagram. They're more oriented towards driving up people's likes. People who are trying to become famous on Instagram will often buy tens of thousands of bot followers, and it's really easy to do that. And to launch the bots, it's fairly easy as well. There's websites like Fiverr.com, F-I-V-E-R-R, that people can go to and search bots, and you'll find bot followers or bots that can do things for you on across all sorts of different social media platforms. There are platforms where bots have a really hard time sort of breaking into user-based conversations, and those are the sort of closed platforms like Signal or WhatsApp. It's trickier to launch a bot that can really get at people's conversation about politics in closed network social media applications.
Right.
And so I think that that's why we're kind of seeing a upsurge in those kinds of applications. That said, we're also seeing a surge in applications like Periscope and others like it that have bots built into the infrastructure of the program. So even Slack, for instance, has bots built into the infrastructure of the program. And I think it has a lot of people wondering, will people be able to build Trojan horse bots that seem very, very harmless when they're pitched to, say, Facebook Messenger, but then when they're actually launched on Facebook, they do malicious things. And so this sort of bot craze should be tempered with the reality, which is that there are people online that do want to manipulate public opinion and also to steal information.
Do you mean kind of a being introduced as a friendly bot, let's say, to help you order fast food or what have you, mm-hmm. and then kind of changing the nature of the bot once a user is hooked in? Or
right, exactly. And I think even that friendly bot can do things like gather your data and give a bunch of things to the person that you didn't realize you were giving away.
All right, Sam. Well, this has been super interesting. Thanks for taking the time out to share your insights with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've just been speaking with Sam Woolley, PhD candidate at the University of Washington and director of research at the Oxford Internet Institute's Comprop project. You can follow Sam on Twitter at Samuel Woolley and learn more about the Comprop project at politicalbots.org. We're out of time for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have and you're listening through an Apple device, why don't you tap that subscribe button and leave us a review in the iTunes store. I just want to thank Copenhagen University for the studio, Earfunk for these jams, and Peter Orbeck for editing. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Copenhagen. See you next time.